Okay, so let's do now is try to explain the Rambam that we left off yesterday. The Rambam says, again, if you do a mitzvah, totally lishma, no external motivation whatsoever, right? Zero, which is almost very rare, right? Once in a lifetime or whatever, even for a great talent, you know. If you do that, then you with that you're zochah l'olam haba. And because it's so rare, the God gave a big Torah, and through the big Torah, well, chances are at some point in our life we'll encounter something like that. And that's Hashem chafetz man zivka. God wants man for man to be able to be a tzaddik. And therefore God gave Yagdil Torah V'Yadir, gave a great Torah, a big Torah. So the question is why is it so that I don't get Olam Haba, or that I'm only guaranteed Olam Haba from the thing if I do it in this strange way? Because look, so you have a mitzvah, like let's say I'm a guy who really does staka, or I'm not even trying to know, there's a guy who really does staka, Lishma, you see from that one case, you see he does. Yeah, it's his fault. Every other day, it happens to be that their emotions that go into the giving tzedakah. But either way, he would do it anyways. He would do it lishma. He has the motivation to do it lishma. So you'd think it's almost accidental that it happens to be that he also has emotions. So why should he be deprived of the svar? Because the fact that he also happens to have emotions going in his way, and the only way he can get the svar is if he happens upon a crazy case, you know. Which is almost you can't really construct. It's a funny conclusion. You could have learned that a person can't really know if he's lishma in general. How do you really know if you're lishma? So the only way you can know if you're lishma is if you create this type of a case. And in this case, where there are no emotions involved, so then and you still do it, so then you could see that you're lishma. Then you could discover that you're really a guy who's lishma, right? So you could have learned that that's what it means, that Rechon Ibn Trajan wants to know if he gets Olam Haba. Am I Lishma or am I not Lishma? And then from the story, he says, oh, I'm Lishma. Because of the story, I know I'm Lishma. But then you'd say is that really he would get Olam Haba for all of his actions. It just, this is the only way he knows about it. Right? But the Rambam's not saying that, I don't think. He's saying is that when a person does the mitzvah, he's talking about Olam Haba, that when a person does the mitzvah with zero other motivation, then he gets Olam Haba. According to the way I was just suggesting, it would be whenever a guy does the mitzvah shema, he gets it. Now, he only knows whether it's really shema if he doesn't have any other motivation. But the reality is that he gets it anytime he does the shema. But that's the Rambam's not saying. What I'm saying is if you do with zero other motivation, then you get Olam Haba. Otherwise, there's no guarantee like that. So the question is, why not? That's a good question. Does the Rambam mean, let's say I do something for lishma and lo lishma, these mixed motivations. Is it pshat that that's not called lishma? And that's why I don't get the Olam Haba? No, it's really I get Olam Haba for lishma. But when I have mixed motivations, that's not called lishma. Or do you say no? That really, that of course that's lishma. That's also lishma. Look, that's lishma. But the only thing is, you only get Olam Haba when it's lishma and zero other zero lishma motivations, right? Is this a din in what lishma means, or is it a din in not what lishma means, but when you get Olam Haba? It's not clear. I mean, the simplest way, the Rambam, he says, if you have nothing mixed in ela asa lishma me'ahava, but you do it lishma me'ahava, the implication, I guess, would be that otherwise it's not really lishma. That's the only logical one, that it's only lishma in that case. Because if it's lishma otherwise, then why wouldn't you get the svar? Okay, it's hard to understand why, yeah, fine. It's not really loud why it shouldn't be lishma though, otherwise. But it kind of sounds that way. It sounds like he's saying that's not really lishma. But why not? I mean, I have what I have, the way it takes. Because these external things, therefore it ends up not being lishma. Look, that's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because it's true. It also has these things. Okay. So it also, look, but they're dispensable. I would do it even if they didn't have these things. So wouldn't you say that really why I'm doing it is the lishma reason, and these things are just like icing on the cake? Why do you say now it's not lishma, or I don't get Olam Haba from it? I'm thinking like this, is that First, I'm going to say the idea, and then I'm going to show you a related idea. Okay, but I think it has to do with the way a person is constructed. The way a person, like, so to speak, the interplay of a person's emotions and his mind is that when, see, like, the in a certain sense, the emotions are more, like, real to a person on a basic level. Like, we live in the world of the physical and the instinctual, and we transcend that world to the world of ideas. Okay, but it's like our base is the world of the physical and the world of the emotions. You know, and we have to rise above it in order to enter a world of ideas, of the abstraction. Okay? And that being the case, it's like when there's mixed motivations, so when you do it, what registers is the emotions. Because the emotions are like more primary in some sense to the person's existence, and you have to. It's like if they're both there, what hits you is like the emotional import of the thing, and the Olam Haba comes from when the person attaches himself to the ideas themselves, to the world of knowledge, per se, where he's, so to speak, he has nothing to do with it. It's totally attached himself to the world, to that truth, the ideas himself. And the action, a mitzvah, which is an expression or a result of the world of ideas, so if it is done in a way where there's zero else, there's no motivation other than that, so then he's attaching himself to that world, to the truth, because he's not motivated by anything else, and he's just motivated by his mind. And he's doing his action is a movement of his soul, of his personality, towards the truth. And that's what he's grabbing hold of. And that perfects him. That movement of that choice of the mind in the absence of anything else is a choice of the soul, movement of the soul of the person towards truth. And he grabs hold of the truth. But when there's an action which has mixed motivations. I wanted the mitzvah. My mind tells me to do the mitzvah, but also it will be great. It will be awesome. People will love me. You know, whatever the emotion happens to be. So what I'm saying is, like, you can't escape the instinctual attachment, the instinctual draw, and the instinctual satisfaction. And because that's there, and it's more primary in a person, it's like it's when you do it, it, like, registers as an action of, and so of the satisfying the instinct. And it can't, you can't, so to speak, isolate out the truth value in the thing and just attach yourself to that, because of the fact that you're physical and you're instinctual and your emotions just naturally grab hold of the thing. So you can't remove that. So it's true you may have done it otherwise, but the perfection isn't from being one who would have done it otherwise. It's from you attaching yourself to the truth. But the emotional value of the thing is pronounced in your psyche that it's, you can't say I'm doing an action of mind. You're not doing an action of mind. You're doing an action of instincts, and it's when they're mixed together, saying that the instinct is more pronounced because of just the way a person is. So if there's a total crossroad, a person could, it's more pronounced, but he could rise above it, and he could say I'm going to ignore that totally. And I'm going to go the other way, you know. But when there's a mixture, it's like you can't, because you have that emotional satisfaction or the emotional draw, the action. You can't just separate it out. The only way you can separate it out is when they're like on opposite sides. So then you could turn away from that and go towards the mind. But like when they're together, you're not turning away from it. It's there, and you're acting in line with it. So when you act in line with it, it's like you can't, if they're too close together, you can't remove the instinct because it's there. When you not have the instinctual satisfaction, you have it. And it draws you, and the experience is the one that is an instinctual experience. So that, like, it prevents you from being, from relating to the idea, to the knowledge per se. It reminds me of, and don't know, this might be an association, but it reminds me of, if anyone's heard the Rebbe's shiras on Adam Rishon, and there was a difference between Adam Rishon prior to the sin and after the sin. Whereas that prior to the sin, he was what it says, Chazal says, Yetzahara Mibachutz, and now it's Yetzahara Mibachnem, which means the way Rebbe explained that was that prior to the sin, a man's energy naturally went towards knowledge. And it's when he saw Chava, when he saw his wife, he desired her. But when he didn't see her, he was just right in the knowledge. His natural flow of energy was knowledge. He was like more of an intellectual being. That was like his essence, so to speak. He naturally, his energy was going towards knowledge all the time. You know, and then the instinct pulled him away. You know? But afterwards, after the chait, it says his yetzar b'fnem, means it was internalized. And then it says that he saw that he desired chava even when he didn't see her. Which means now the natural flow of energy of the person is towards the instinctual. And that's like, so to speak, your primary modus operandi is your instinctual. And in order to, you have to transcend that. But that's naturally how a person, where his energy goes. It's naturally like driving towards that. You know, that's the way man is. So I'm saying, since that's the way man is, that's like more primary. So therefore, you can't quite remove the energy. You can't stop that. The only way to stop it and to get the lamaba is where you have the ultimate bechira, where you just totally leave the emotions behind, all the emotions behind, then you just attach yourself to the truth. But as long as there are those mixtures, even a little bit. Even a little bit, because still it's the quality of the instinctual, which is a more primary pull on the person, which is that when you do the action, it's like it gives you that instinctual satisfaction, and it prevents you from attaching to the good per se. It's too juicy, so to speak. It hits you too strongly. That it's like the experience is like, you know, your emotions get attacked, get excited. So it's like you can't attach yourself to the more abstract reality. You know? Even though you could be prior to the point you could think about it, understand it, and all that. But the experience itself is gets a person. And but the case of Rav Yochanan ben Saradion was the case where basically there was no experience. Experience, all the emotions were the opposite way. There was no emotional satisfaction at all in that action. You know, it was painful. It was just the truth says I got to do it, the halakhic reality of it being the aniyam stuff. But he didn't feel religious. He felt, on the contrary, he felt like he's losing his Suda's Purim and he's giving away the stuff and it's stupid and he doesn't feel smart by doing it. He feels like he's, you know, it's clumsy and all whatever, all the different emotions which come into the thing. There's no attraction emotionally of that action. But for the mind of simply it's truth. And the mind, then you're attaching yourself to the world of mind. And that's what that brings a person to perfection. I think I'm saying is that even though, like, if he didn't have his mind, he may have gone the other way. Even if the case is that without his mind, he would have been, the emotions are strong on the other side. But now he used his mind and he decided to go with truth. But still, there's also emotions on the side of truth. So he's using his bechira, I guess, and deciding to go with that. But still, the nature of the experience, because there is a pleasure or enjoyment, instinctual enjoyment in the experience, so therefore the experience can't be a vehicle of him attaching himself to the gut, because it gives him that emotional enjoyment and satisfaction, so it prevents him from attaching himself to the good because of it. So even though the guy may be at a high level, involved in ideas and all that stuff, but what he's saying is like there's an idea in Olam Haba of attaching to the good per se. That's the real Ishma. That's what I think it's a real Ishma in the Abba. It means, like the Ram says somewhere else, it's like it's truth, he's doing the truth because it's truth. Simply that's it. It's just attaching to the reality, period. And that's the real Ishma. Once there's other stuff mixed in there, then that other stuff becomes more pronounced to the person. So then it can't really be the Ishma. He would have done it he would have done it anyways. He would have. And probably he would have, but that's still, I'm saying, still the nature of the experience is like is corrupting, so to speak, and it prevents him from relating to it properly. I mean, it's not a very happy thought, you know? I mean, I'm not sure if this is the end all of everything. Like, is he saying, is that it? So without this, you don't have any Olam Haba? Or is he talking about a specific kind of Olam Haba? Or is, you know, like, I don't really know. I'm not sure. But to think that it's only, I mean, only Chanina ben Tradion got Olam Haba because there's one time in his life that he did it, I mean, it just makes it almost like that's all he got. I mean, God gave everyone so many millions of mitzvahs in order that we could happen to have this once in a lifetime. So are we the same thing as him and Tradion? It's hard to believe. Right? So I don't know. I just feel like there must be something more to the picture here. I think this is, there is a truth to this idea, and I hear the idea, but I don't think it's the whole story.
You know? Rabbi.
But it's talking about a particular type of Olam Haba or a particular quality or I don't know, something like that. I don't really know more, but I'm just kind of trying to find what's going on here. But I mean, I should hope that there's something more to it than this. But I don't know. You know? I mean, what Jonah says is, I think it's true. I think it sounds like you could read into the Rambam. He's not saying this is the only way to go Olam Haba. He's just saying, as Chaim Shadi wanted, no, do I have Olam Haba? And it's a complicated story. Do you not? There's a lot of factors involved. But here is a one way, which is a shoo-in to Olam Haba, so to speak. This is definitely gives you Olam Haba. That's what Ram is saying. It's a yisod that if you do this, hariu zocha balach Olam Haba. Then through this action, you get Olam Haba. He doesn't mean that there's no other ways. He's not saying that. He's not saying that if you don't ever have this, then you don't. But he's saying this will give a person Olam Haba, period. And therefore, God and His desire that God wants man to be able to get Olam Haba, and therefore He gave us so many mitzvahs so that if every person could really get a chance to really get a little bit of Olam Haba or whatever. But it doesn't necessarily mean that there's no other way. But all that other stuff, there's no like rule. So, do I have Olam Haba or not? I don't know. God has to figure out all the different things in your life and judge you and all that. But this is one way He's saying that you can know for sure. This is like this. It could be, it's like, look, if they're mixed motivations, maybe it's saying then God has to weigh who you are and all this. But this is like, this is a clear cut way, which definitely gives you Olam Haba. Other stuff is maybe more variable, more subtle, more we don't know about that stuff. Maybe there are other ways. But he's saying this is a way, which definitely, because what are you doing? You're attaching yourself to the good, period. There's nothing else. So that's what Olam Haba is. And so for Olam Haba is the degree to which you're attached to truth. You're definitely attached to truth. This action is an action of attaching yourself to truth. Yeah. Back to this. So I think this is a similar point, is that the idea what you're telling about the Zakin, you know, who became senile or whatever. So it's saying is that here is an instance, it's a mitzvah, which is kavod Torah, kavod Rav, which normally has a lot of emotions involved in it, and people do it for lots of mixed motivations, which are not lishma, and even if you really would do kavod Torah without it, but it lacks, you have an admixture of lots of different things. But the kavod to the Talmud Chacham, who has lost his chachma, lends itself. I don't know if it always can't have other emotions, but it lends itself to this type of a lishma performance, because your emotions of kavod Rav are gone, because you have opposite emotions. Emotions is look down on this guy, and you know, here's your chance to rise above the Torah and the Chacham and all that. But your knowledge that he represents Torah, which isn't like an emotional reality, but it's a reality to your mind. So that's lends itself to lishma. Of course, again, there always can be the lishma types of things, but he's directing them. This is an area which lends itself to this type of a thing. To this type of perfection. And they're not so easy to come by, these things. Not so easy to come by. And he thought that, yeah. So I was doing this, I was discussing with Zimmer. He realized that you could extend the idea to these other areas also. So I think the idea is that, let's take Shnei Megach Tiergum. So learning Torah is a great mitzvah. Greatest, right? But it's a mitzvah which has the lishma motivations and the thing. Right? I mean, there's a great lots of enjoyment, the enjoyment, the intellectual excitement, and the experience of learning, and the like let's say the whatever different emotions, the cover that you get, the ego that's involved. I mean, there's all kinds of emotions involved in learning, and it oftentimes a person could be involved in learning for low lishma motivations, right? And as such, so it will prevent him from this from the true lishma experience, right? See, b'shnayim ikra is a type of a learning. Is a type of a learning which is really, in general, removed from these emotions. Okay, if anyone who does it knows how onerous it is, and how it's in a certain sense, it's like, first of all, it's not. You have to go pretty quick because you have to. It's a lot of material, so it's like you're forced. Learning, part of learning in general, enjoying the learning, is you go at a pace which is, you're not forced, there's no forced pace in general learning. You go at a pace which is your mind, you know, normally in learning you go at a pace that your mind is, goes with, but in a certain sense you don't do the partial. I mean, there's a deadline. Learning usually doesn't have deadlines like that. There's a deadline and you have to cover a certain amount of ground. So it's like, in a certain sense, there's a certain, person doesn't like that type of thing. It's not in line with the way normally learning is. And also, it's not very, like, a person likes to learn what he wants to learn, doing my own thing. You know, my own guy, learning my own thing. You know, this is not you doing your own thing, you're doing what everyone else is doing. It doesn't lend itself to that type of, you know, there's no glory in doing Shnayim Ikra, you know, finish Shnayim Ikra. It's like more of like a goal and of a, you know. So, but at the same time, and again, it doesn't really lend itself to Ian. I mean, look, you could do it slow and whatever, but that's not, you're not doing Shnayim Ikra when you're sitting back and thinking about the pasuk. I mean, I guess that's part of the point of it, but I mean, there's part of the idea of it, but the mitzvah is to really just, so to speak, to cover the ground. You know, and so far, it's hard to do, is to think about it. If anyone does it, it's hard, because, you know, it's hard when you're halfway through, when you're a third of the way through the parasha, it's hard just to waste, so to speak, waste time, and, you know, and thinking about the ideas, because you have to finish it, the whole rest of the parasha ahead of you. So it's a hard type of way to juggle the thing, you know. And it lends itself, there's a stress and a lack of motivation in this mitzvah. But at the same time, it's part of like the preservation of the Torah, the Klal Yisrael, and you're learning as a component of the Klal. And Torah Shavuot Sav is like the foundation of the Torah, and it's a mitzvah which is maintaining, and it's codified in a way that maintains Torah Shavuot Sav in the minds of Klal Yisrael. And you're one part of Klal Yisrael, and you're involved in a national mission, which everyone has to do. Otherwise, you're not going to end up having Torah Shavuot Sav and the knowledge of Torah Shavuot Sav in the people. So it's formulated and codified in such a way, even though a particular lamdan may be more enjoyable to do all of Shnayim Ikra in 1 week. You know, like whatever it was. B.V.R.V.I. or whatever I was trying to do. So, but it's still, he had to realize that there's an Am, we're part of an Am, and this is a national mission of maintaining the Torah. And it's an important mitzvah, because the foundation of everything is the Torah, and Talmud Torah. So now you have to, so to speak, align your experience of Talmud Torah, which normally is very emotionally enjoyable, and you have to, so to speak, just attach yourself to the mitzvah per se and the value of the Torah per se in the abstract, without all the perks in the experience. So it lends itself. It's a mitzvah which lends itself to attaching yourself to the reality of the preservation of the Torah and the good, the truth in the Torah, and in a way which is removed from the motivations that normally come along for it. It's not saying it's bad, all those other emotional motivations, but there's a certain value in this. I'm not saying all your learning should be this, but he's saying, first of all, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, there's a value in it, and also there's a harm, because it's risky. Because that's what he's already to be careful, because when you get to this type of a thing and you remove all the other motivations, it's oftentimes a person could be lax about it. So you have to be careful not to fall, because this is, so to speak, like a measure of the person in a certain sense, is how good are you at doing this form of learning. Be careful, because your emotions are, when you remove those other motivations, how good are you at doing mitzvahs? It's not so easy anymore. It's not so easy anymore when you do that. So be careful. Because we're surprisingly motivated by lots of other things besides for the true motivation of the Torah and the mitzvahs. So So here he's saying is be careful. He's showing them that be careful, this is a hard one. This is a hard one, and it's hard, risky, and potentially very beneficial. And the third one, or the second, whatever the numbers are anymore, is like the blood. You see, dam. Dam is a, you want to call myself? Myself, yeah. Dam is a mitzvah, which is a mitzvah which is not that hard to keep. Not eating blood. Who eats blood? It's gross. Right? Blood is gross. So a person's emotions often naturally, you know, go towards the keep blood. Right? There's a chazal system like that. Like if a Torah is a reward for blood, if it's a reward for this mitzvah, certainly other mitzvahs which a person are hard for a person to keep. But in general, it's a mitzvah that a person normally keeps out of the lishma motivations. It's a low sasai, but it's a mitzvah that a person does out of, not because he really thinks about the concept of dam and to the dam is relegated to the mizbeach and to God and whatever ideas you think about, or because of halacha, he just doesn't eat dam because he doesn't eat dam. He's grossed out by it. But that's not really attaching yourself to the mitzvah of dam. That's just your emotions are such, you're not going to eat dam. So that's not the real schar. A person who just doesn't eat blood isn't getting the real schar of not eating blood. But this instance of, I don't know all the details of the thing, but this is a case where it's like you're cutting the arteries of, you know, this thing to get all the last remnants of the blood because there's a chashash that maybe you're going to roast it all together. And it's like it's a zehirus about dam, which is not emotionally, to care about dam, which does not really pay off emotionally. No one feels like they're gross because they eat a chicken if they don't cut off the whatever. Because look, it's a chicken, it's dead, they cooked it, they whatever. I know, technically, halachically speaking, telling me is there still some sort of I don't know exactly the details of Yudah Shita. But the point is like it's an instance of dam and a chumrah in the area of dam which doesn't lend itself to the emotions of dam. So the person who's zahir about that is because he has a hubris about the Torah, about the halachic system itself, not without any of those emotions. So it's three instances of mitzvot which lend themselves to emotional motivations, and yet these are instances of doing them where those emotions are removed, and that's what he's showing them. He's enlightening them. He's giving them guidance. Here are three. First of all, he's showing the derech and mitzvot in general, but he's giving them insight. Here's three opportunities to jump on and be careful. These are really unique opportunities that could afford a person a great perfection, which he wouldn't necessarily otherwise be able to get if he wouldn't discover. He discovered these things, and he's passing them on to his kids. You know. So it shows the derech and mitzvot, and also there's value in the particulars also, because the person doesn't often come by to find particular instances. These are three particular mitzvot that lend themselves to the type of thing like the Rambam's talking about, to like a purely lishma type of a thing. You know, and they also lend themselves to falling because they don't have all the lishma things. So it's like it's an important part of a person's avodas Hashem, these types of things. You know, and that's what he's bringing down to them. Question? Turns out, after all, that the three things are related. Okay, at least according to this way of learning. But again, I still don't think that there's a... you can't force it. I mean, that's why... I don't know if you guys, what you thought when I was raising the cup, but still, I mean, I don't think it had to be that way. It just turns out that it is. But I don't think it had to be that way. So that's why I didn't think it was a good... Methodologically, I didn't think it was a good... You know, it's like sometimes, you know... Bad methodology could lead you to a true conclusion, but it's still bad methodology, you know? Like, I don't think it was smart to just use that as a question to guide you, because I could have seen it turning out not to be, you know? So, I think next week what I plan on doing is I mentioned about freeing an avid, freeing a slave. So it's a sugya is or the iser and the mitzvah and the permit to free a slave. So there's a gemara in Brachos, but I think the primary gemara is in Gittin. Gittin, I can't find exactly. I think it's Lamechas Manalath. It's talking about this, whether you could free your slave. So if you free your slave, you're over an asai. So there's a mitzvah of not freeing a slave. I mean, you look at the Gemara, the Rashi, you could look at the Rama. I mean, there's a million Rishonim. I mean, there's a big problem in the Rishonim. you know, about how it is that basically not allowed for your slave, but if it's for to get a minion, you're allowed to, or for any mitzvah, you're allowed to. So why is that? You can't just violate this isurim because the minion is darbanan and that's the rest of the raisa. So how do you just do that? So that's the question. Says the Ramban. I don't do the Ramban. Maybe the Rashba, the Ramam, there's a Ran. I mean, there's a bunch of guys there. Maybe I'll start with Ramam. But you can look at it. It's Tosus.